What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
D-Mace, Fingen, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Fingen here with you. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we've got multiple calls to get to, and we will do that. But first, Derek, we need a response from you.
Give it to me.
So 7 minutes ago.
Exactly.
7 minutes ago, from the at Jared Stillman Twitter account.
Or X.
Mm-hmm. It'll always be Twitter to me, damn it.
Me too. Don't worry about it.
At Jared Stillman. So apparently, at DMason85 has decided that Rand Carthon wasn't GM of a draft that he held a press conference after and admonished the media for criticizing the picks. Convenient. Says Jared. Derek, your response.
All I am going to say is this. Just honor your words. Honor the words that came out of your mouth, okay? I go back to what I was hearing, okay? And these are from the same some of the same people that now says, oh, Rand was the GM last year, that he really wasn't the GM. He liked playing GM, but he really wasn't the GM. Those came out of people's mouths, okay? And when it comes out of your mouth and you try to convince me that he's not the GM, he's not the guy, but then all of a sudden now it's convenient to make him the GM. I know what you said. I know what y'all said, that he's really not running it. Listen, take your pick. I don't care. I'm still going to sleep at night. I still got, you know, what I have. So whether he's here or gone, it's not going to make me any mind. It's really not, but I want y'all to make up y'all mind. Either he was the GM or he wasn't, because I heard several times he's playing GM. He's really not the GM. Well, if that's the case, who is? Vrabel? Okay, Vrabel was the GM. So okay.
Let me play devil's advocate here, because this is where I think one part of Jared's argument is, and if I'm getting it wrong, God knows I'm going to hear about it. But there was a perception.
Yes.
During the first year, well, really the only year, of Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel, there was a perception that Mike Vrabel was running the show, that Rand Carthon was, for lack of a better term, an empty suit, that he was general manager by title only.
And I heard that a lot,
right,
too.
You did hear that a lot. Right. Here's where I think Jared's argument is, because he has mentioned this recently. There was a story written by our colleague Joe Rexroad and Diana Russini in The Athletic following the Titans' firing of Mike Vrabel. And if I recall correctly, there was a portion of that story where it was reported that Mike Vrabel went to ownership and wanted more personnel power and was denied that request. So therefore, Mike Vrabel was not in charge because, according to Joe Rexroad and Diana Russini, Mike Vrabel's attempt to gain more power was denied. So because we know that now, therefore Rand Carthon was in charge. That's the argument.
And I can.
And my phone
that.
Is vibrating. I can. God only knows who this is.
And I can. And you're right. But what I will say is this: if you have insiders, no matter who they are, if you have insiders and your insider is telling you one thing and then you are sort of putting that out, that makes one believe that, okay, that may be the case, because I don't know. So when you say he's playing GM, he's really not the GM, okay, if that's your stance, stay on it. Stand on it. I may be trying to convince you otherwise, but if that's the way you're thinking, then okay. But now conveniently change it when things are not going well. I don't operate from that standpoint. If I said something then, it's going to be now. If I made a mistake, I will admit I made a mistake. I didn't look at that the way I should have looked at it in regards to the Tennessee Titans. But when I'm being told, hey, listen, he's really not the GM. He's really not, you know, he's just playing GM. And this is, you know, you're getting it because they're getting it from somebody in the know. What am I supposed to believe then? I'm only going by what you're telling me. As many times I may try to debunk it, eventually it's just like, okay, if you say that's the case, then okay, I'm going to let that be the case. But the minute I want to say, okay, if that is indeed the case, his tenure, now that Mike Vrabel has been fired, his tenure starts with me, only me. I don't care what you think or you think or you think, only me. His tenure starts now. What he does from this draft moving forward will determine whether he has a job long term or not.
And I would add this. I think I made this point.
That's just rational thinking right there.
I don't think that Rand Carthon can sit here and make a list of these are all the great moves I've made since I've been here. And Chad Brinker would be the same. He doesn't have a lot. They need some good things to happen here.
Of course.
I would argue that because of what they inherited and the mess that's in front of them, I'm not sure there is a GM that can dig out of it in time to save his job. I think that is the biggest challenge that they have, is they don't have a lot to trade mm-hmm. right now. Like, that's why it's almost better for them to lose and have a high pick that they can wield into other picks or have the chance to pick somebody special. You see what I'm saying? Like,
no.
Barry Trotz inherited because David Poyle mm-hmm. was responsible and gave him a lot of draft capital and resources and cap space that allowed Barry Trotz to come in with something to work with. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm trying to say with Rand Carthon. He inherited problems that people didn't really see coming mm-hmm. because the team had won some games. But he doesn't have much to work with. John Robinson inherited the first pick in the draft that he could go wheel and deal, and a quarterback that was in place, even though he didn't turn out to be anything great. Mm-hmm. And then maybe the most brilliant move that John Robinson made was the trade for Ryan Tannehill. Absolutely. That was a huge game changer. So John Robinson did a really good job, mm-hmm. but he was going to experience this even if they kept him, because you cannot go 0-3 in the drafts and have your best players in three drafts be Dylan Raidens and Roger McCreary.
Scott is in Hendersonville. He has been waiting patiently on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Scott, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
This is going to be a twofer. I'm going to refute teammates while also getting my complaint out. Mm-hmm. I don't know who these insiders are, but I do know that after last year's draft, Rand Carthon took credit for it. He took credit for drafting Skoronski and talked about all these other GMs that called him and said, oh, great pick. I was about to pick him, a pick or two later. I know that. So if Carthon's taking credit for it, then he can take the blame when it doesn't work out. And that's my major beef here. And it goes back to Robinson. It goes back to the Isaiah Wilson draft. They have reached and reached and reached and drafted guys 10, 15 picks too high. Instead of trading down, they should have traded down every year. They were thin. They had a lot of good players 4 or 5 years ago, but the roster still wasn't deep. Mm-hmm. They had a few holes on the bottom of the roster. They should have been trading down. And every year there's more holes and more holes and more holes because they keep whiffing and they keep reaching on guys. McCreary is probably the only one they got right. Raidens, no one was going to draft him at the top of the second round, and we can just go down the list. And I'm convinced that Latham was a bad pick because they could have had him at 17 instead of 7.
Well, hold on for a second. How do you know they could have had him at 17? Like, seriously, how
no
do
one
you?
Had, no, one
no, no,
no.
You can't. You
seven.
Can't. Garrett, no, there are a lot of people. No. I want to stop you right there. And I'm going to let you finish. I'm going to let you finish. There are teams that had him rated their top tackle. There are teams in the NFL that had him rated the top tackle in the national in that year's draft. So again,
I'll tell you one.
Because we had him on our show. Steve Hutchinson said the Seahawks had Latham ahead of all the other tackles. There's one.
Well, here's what I know.
Came on our show and said
instead of taking Latham at 7, they could have traded out of 7. and gotten two
first-round picks. How do you know that?
I hear that all the time. They had all these trades on the table.
Okay, let me stop it here.
Okay, go ahead there.
How do you know that? That's what I want to understand. How do you know that? And then how do you know no one else, no other team? Willie just gave you one team, but you said there was no other team outside of the Tennessee Titans that had J.C. Latham as their number one tackle. That's what you're saying. When Willie just gave you one from a Hall of Famer, we had him number one on our board. And I guarantee you, if I was to go talk to more GMs or more personnel individuals, they would say, yeah. Some would say, no, we did have him on the top. Some would say they didn't even have the kid that the Chargers drafted. They probably didn't have him number one. They probably had someone else number one. But to sit here and say no one other than the Titans, that is just – that's misinformation that you're receiving. It really is. Because were you in all 31 of those rooms when they were drafting or putting their draft together? No, you weren't. Well, no, you were not. And no one else came out and said, you know what, we didn't have Latham as a top, you know, a top 10 pick. No one came out and said that. But the people that we have talked to said, yeah, you know what, he was our number one tackle coming out. So that makes two teams. That makes the Tennessee Titans and the Seattle Seahawks two teams that had Latham rated their number one offensive tackle. That's all I'm saying. For you to say no one did it, they could have got two first-round draft picks. How do you know that? And then you go off and start saying this other stuff. But then that, like, how do you know, seriously, how do you know that? That no one else would have drafted him or no one else had them in the top 15 or top 10 and they could have got him at 17. I'm pretty sure that had you not drafted J.C. Latham, you probably would have got a tackle, but you wouldn't have gotten J.C. Latham or those other tackles. You know why? Because there started to be a run on tackles.
Howie is in Houston.
He's been waiting all the way from Houston?
Yes, it says Howie Houston. So Howie is in Houston. He's been waiting patiently. Howie, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Hey, I love this show. That's right. I'm in Houston. We are in a drought. And that's a good thing because it's humid in Houston in the summertime, so we are loving our winter. So I'm thankful. Anyway, I just see a bigger issue here with the breakdown of the Titans. I would love to get all three of your thoughts on this. And that today there we see that the Colts benched Richardson.
Yes.
We see that Pittsburgh went away from Fields. Going back to the Titans before Tannehill, we saw how, you know, they benched Mariota. And what I just keep seeing, even with Levis, and maybe I'm wrong, Derek, have you seen this too on the sideline? Whenever these guys get benched, there's like this peace and relief that comes to them. It's like, oh, okay, I'm done for now. And so my question is, if that's true, if you guys see like these quarterbacks coming in the NFL, they're kind of relieved when they finally get the sideline. Who do you see as the problem in quarterbacks being thrown out and going through a carousel? Is it the fans and their over expectations to win in order to come to the stadium, or is it ownership and their desire to get that guy to win game one? And if they don't, then we start all over again with all the drama, the high expectations, and basically seeing things bottom out like we're seeing again with Levis and everything coming down from that this year. What do you guys see on this? If this makes sense, and I would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks, man. Love the show.
Thank you, Howie.
From Houston. We appreciate that.
I hope he doesn't mind that I'm one of those people that swallows my H's. So it's Howie from Houston. It's not Howie from Houston. I hope Howie doesn't mind that.
Sure he doesn't.
Please go ahead.
I don't think it's so much a relief from these quarterbacks. I just think it gives them – one, no quarterback wants to be benched. No player wants to be benched. But it does give you a time to reflect and sort of see it from a different point of view. I don't think it's so much of, 100% relief. I'm sure there is some to it, meaning, whatever the situation was, now I won't be the blame for it, But it's still, I would rather be out there in a sense But, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, in these quarterback situations, sometimes you have to take a few steps back to take some forward, whether it be Indianapolis, Carolina, or here in Nashville. You know, you got to, in this league, you got to find out very quickly what you have in a quarterback. Because you, if you don't, you can find yourself falling further and further behind in the race to win a Super Bowl. Because if you don't have a starting quarterback, you don't have a chance. If you don't have a quarterback, that franchise guy, your chances of winning the Super Bowl or going to the Super Bowl is very slim.
By the way, before we get to Paul from Nashville on our phone line, there was another wide receiver trade in the NFL. Mm. The Carolina Panthers have traded Diontae Johnson to the Baltimore Ravens.
Go Ravens!
Yes, they added him
for,
another playmaker.
I wonder what the return
is. It is a pick flop. With what's it? Well, pick flop.
Swapping a pick.
Adam Schefter said a pick flop. I've never heard that. I've heard pick swap, not pick flop. The Panthers are getting a 5th-round pick for Diontae Johnson and a 6th-round pick. Okay. So Diontae Johnson, now a member of the Baltimore Ravens, traded from the Carolina Panthers. A 5th-round pick for the Panthers, Diontae Johnson, and a 6th-round pick for the Ravens.
Moving up in the draft, however many slots that is, from the 6th to the 5th. Interesting.
The AFC loading up on receiver trades. We've seen Diontae Johnson move. We've seen Amari Cooper move, Devontae Adams, and, of course, DeAndre Hopkins. So a wide receiver arms race in the AFC. Now we'll get to Paul from Nashville on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Paul, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Okay, guys, I think I can answer Willie's question without having D-Mace yell at me, or I'll give it a shot. I've never worked for an NFL franchise. I'm neither ignorant nor arrogant enough to say that I could pick players better than Rand. I don't have a team of scouts working for me giving me that kind of information. But there is one thing that I would do differently, and that is I think the dishonesty with the fan base is what bothers most people. I think coming on and saying the ball didn't bounce our way, or coming on and saying we got everything we wanted out of this draft or free agency from pick 1 to 7, that is what drives people insane. And I think that that is what gives you less grace for what John Robinson did that he inherited when he comes out and says, oh, I got everything I wanted. We're in the right direction, instead of saying, hey, everybody, this is going to take a hot minute to get it right. I don't think, as someone who pays, as a Nashville native and pays for tickets and pays taxes here, that pays for these things, that when someone hands me chocolate pudding and says it's chocolate pudding, but it's feces, like, I know what it is. Just say what you've got. That stuff is what gets on everyone's nerve. And I think that we all live in a world where we can sniff out BS pretty quickly. That is what I would do differently. And I think people would feel differently about Rand if they didn't have to hear that kind of stuff.
I agree with you 100%. I think I've said that all along.
Nobody wants poop pudding, let me tell you. Nobody wants poop pudding.
I feel like Rand Carthon probably should have been out getting his message out, connecting with fans, and reiterating the theme. You guys will remember this. You won't, Adam, because it was before you joined us. But when they fired Mike Vrabel and we had Paul Kuharsky on, I asked Paul Kuharsky that day, so this was the day after they fired Mike Vrabel, I said, should the Titans say that they are in rebuilding? So from the day that they fired him, I have been saying that the rebuilding thing, even if you don't want to use that language and you're careful on how you message it, that should have been the approach. I agree. I think that would have been... And I'm not saying it in hindsight, right? I think a lot of people, when they say, well, they could have traded down to 17, or they could have traded the second round pick for 3 more picks, you're saying this in hindsight, and you don't even know if that's 100% true. What I'm telling you is what I said from the start. I do think that they gave a little bit of a false sense of security that they could be more competitive when you couldn't know that. You couldn't know how Levis was going to play. You couldn't know that all of the free agents you brought in, all these new players, were going to get you where you wanted to go. That was a tough needle to thread. They would have been much better off saying, I'm not really sure what's going to happen. This is a new era. We've got a new quarterback. We've got a young coach. And we don't know what's going to happen. But we are going to try to build a new team after we just went through a window where we had a lot of success. We won a lot of games. We got a couple of division titles. We got to an AFC championship game. We fell just short of what the ultimate goal is. And now we've got to start a start over here. And I don't know what that's going to look like, but we're going to work hard to make it happen.
And I understand. I get what you're saying, as well as the caller. But again, here's the deal. For one, let me address quickly. The ball bouncing our way, we know what that is.
That was a mistake. Metaphor.
No, it was it may have been wording, but we're not dumb. Okay? We don't have dumb listeners. We don't have dumb callers. Okay? So we know in the context of what he's talking about, what he exactly means. He doesn't mean the ball literally, like the ball didn't bounce our way. That's not what he meant, okay? Just understand. I want y'all to understand that first before we even dive into anything else. Understand that when he says, and maybe it was the wrong wording, but me as a football guy, I know exactly what he means. And if I, as a football guy, am telling y'all what he exactly means, then that's what it's. Hey, listen, the ball didn't bounce our way. It didn't mean, okay, we fumbled the ball and it went to Detroit instead of us. No, that's not what he means. Or we threw the ball and it went to Detroit instead of one of our guys. That's not what he means. He just means things like we're close in games, but it's not. We're not good enough. Basically, that's what he's saying. We are not good enough. He can't say we are not good enough, okay? Even John Robinson didn't say, the bottom half of my roster is not good. What John did was try to sell you on, we got some good players, and we believe we drafted some good players. So when Rand Carthon, listen to me very closely, people, when Rand Carthon says the ball didn't bounce our way, what he's really saying is we're not good enough to make the mistakes that we're making and overcome them. That's all he's saying, and we have smart listeners. So listen through the words and see what he's actually saying. And then now let me get on the draft really quick. There's no GM in America. No GM, even the GMs in college right now. That's what they call them. There's no GM in sports that's going to go into a draft after the draft and say, man, damn, we didn't get nobody we wanted. We just drafted people just to be drafting them. We didn't get the guy we wanted. He went to that team. That guy went to that team. Man, we didn't get the guy we wanted. What they are going to say, which Rand Carthon said, which any other GM would have said, we identified positions that we needed. We identified those individuals, and if we had a chance to draft them, we were going to draft them, which they felt good about the guys that they drafted based upon, you know, whether it was times they ran at the combine or film or interviews. They felt at that moment that, hey, listen, we got the guys that we wanted. Now, did it work out? No, it didn't, but you can't fault him for saying, listen, we went into the draft, we identified some areas, And we got the guys that we believe can help us. What is so hard to believe? What is so hard to hear in that? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, again, we are a country of selective hearing. We hear what we want to hear, okay? And it's cool if that's the way you want to be. But again, what GM in America would have said, we didn't get what we wanted. We got a bad team, this and that. No, they tried to tell you in wording. But for some reason, y'all don't want to hear or see through what he's really saying. Listen, the ball didn't bounce our way, which translate to we're not a good enough team, okay, yet to overcome the mistakes that we have. And you know what? He is right, because if he comes out and says we're not a good enough team, that team's going to quit on him.
615-737-1025. Wonderful participation from all of you. Thank you for that. Coming up next, our weekly conversation with Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. We'll chat with Clark next. Derek Mason and Adam Vinget, 1025-1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vinget, and Donick, 1025-1063, The Game. Derek Mason and Adam Vinget. Willie Donick had to step out to take care of some personal business. He's upset that it's going to interfere with our weekly conversation with Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Clark, thank you for joining us as always. Although your team did come up short this past weekend against Texas, what I was most struck by listening to you after the game and listening to your players is that there are no more moral victories for your program because of what you've been able to accomplish this season. Your players went into that game against Texas expecting to win. I mean, that is a powerful thing, I imagine, for a coach to be able to foster within a football program, considering where that may have been when you first returned to Vanderbilt to where it is now. How would you describe that journey?
Well, it's been a long one. And I think, you know, obviously as a competitor, you never want to have a situation where anything other than accomplishing the mission is acceptable or okay. I think one of the great challenges in a season is that you have to see it as, you know, as one journey, not really 12 independent journeys. And so in that context, you can learn from both good results and bad results. And so there are things from Saturday that we can look at and say, you know, we did these things well. And then also to shift, say, but we need to do these things better to get the outcome we want. That can help us strengthen in our next performance. But that's our approach. But certainly we don't accept finishing close is something that you know, we celebrate or we think is in any sense accomplishing the mission. This is our mission's winning, and this is a team that takes great pride in the pursuit of that and is very disappointed when we fall short. But if you look at the game, what gives me peace of mind about our competitive makeup, and this is where this team separates from the others I've fielded here, there's no matter what the flow of the game tells them, the doubt that might have existed in the past is eliminated. I mean, we went at half and came back out and fought tooth and nail and scratched our way back into it. And you only do that against a team as talented as Texas and as well coached as Texas, if there's a deeply ingrained belief that, you know, we're here to win and we have everything we need to win. And unfortunately the clock ran out on us. And so the lesson is how do we play a little more opportunistic early in the game, to allow ourselves to close it out at the end.
Clark, you're preparing to face Auburn this weekend. Last season, New Mexico State went to Auburn, won 31-10. Diego Pavia had 3 touchdowns. Considering the connective tissue between the New Mexico State program and your own, do you look at film from that New Mexico game last year as you game plan for Auburn this weekend?
You know, I don't. I've watched that game a number of times. I did that as I was evaluating our program, you know, at the end of the season last year, and also as I was evaluating Tim Beck as a play caller. But this is a different team. It's a different Auburn team, and you know, we have pretty well ingrained systems in place here that you know, we're gonna adjust to fit to best attack and defend against Auburn, but you know, we're not going to deviate too far from who we are and what we do. So this is about how we adjust and adapt our strategy to go play a great game, but more than anything else, we need to bring our identity and the discipline, respect, and spirit that defines us as a good team. And you know, we need to play a good game, because despite the adversity that Auburn's faced this year, they're coming off a great road win where I think they've really established an identity as a team that centers on an aggressive defense and a dynamic, explosive rushing attack. And when you look at their film, I mean, there's talent all over the field. They have explosive receiver skill. This is as good of a backfield as we've faced. Their offensive line's physical. Defensively, they're big, they're strong, they're fast, they're physical. And all this factors into a special teams group that's really, really good. So it's a good team. It's a road environment, a tough road environment in the SEC. This one will require us to play our best game. And, you know, hopefully the things that we've learned as we've gone through the season, we can apply those and give ourselves the best chance.
We'll talk with Vanderbilt's head football coach, Clark Lee. Now, Coach, I know Diego was banged up a bit in this past game, but you said he will be underneath center for you against Auburn. How do you protect him, knowing that that he is dealing with some ailments and he is a big part of, you know, what the offense has to do and what they are able to do each and every week. Is there a way you can protect him without taking away his physical brand of football?
Well, he is banged up, and obviously he's tough as nails, and you know, practice today, but the accumulation of the season is catching up to him a little bit, and that's not going to deter him at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, Diego's a true warrior, but you know, inevitably in this league, that's the nature of the week in, week out grind. As far as protecting him, you know, I feel like we can design the best mechanisms for protection as coaches, teach them and train them, meaning like, how are we protecting certain looks from their defense, pass protecting, how are we trying to take hits off him in the pocket? You know, when it comes to our run game, there's certainly ways to design, determined gives or plays where, you know, we create the leverage we need to get the ball in the perimeter and out of his hands. And yet our offense flows best through him. And so there's the balance between looking for opportunities just to take a couple hits off him, but also needing him to play the game how he knows how to play it, for us to be as successful as we can be. And I mean, we can aspire to do anything. At the end of the day, Diego will have the ball in his hands and he'll make decisions based off what he feels like puts us in the best position to win. And what I know about him is there's never going to be a point in time where he chooses to protect himself rather than lay it all on the line for the sake of the team.
Now, you guys were 3-for-12 on third down, and you know in this business that the longer you can stay on the field, the better it is for your team and mainly your offense. How do you remedy that, being better than a 3-and-12 team? And then on the other side, the defense getting off the field on third down.
Yeah. I think, first of all, to talk, you know, when you look at the Texas game and you think about our plan to win and the things we needed to do, possession time was a critical part of that, because that's a really explosive offense, and it's a defense that's very, very good. I mean, that is as good of a defensive front as I've seen probably since 2021 Georgia. And in order to find yards against the front like that, you've got to wear them out, and wearing them out means you need to stay on schedule and keep them on the field. And that's how you can open up opportunities late in the game to maybe hit some explosive plays and really kind of hammer home some of the base points of your identity that are so important to success. I think, you know, part of the Alabama game, you know, that was the formula where that's a really skilled defense that we were able to keep on the field for a really long time. And by the time the end of the game came around, you know, we were the more physical team. So, you know, being on schedule, you know, finding the and creating the room early for and being happy with 3 or 4 yard gains early, so that hopefully those 3 or 4 yard gains become 6 to 10 yards later on in the game. And then, you know, the more you possess the ball, the more opportunities you have to get to your shots. And so at some point, you know, we can certainly go methodically down the field, but at some point we need to cover some ground in chunks, and snap accumulation is a big part of that. Defensively, you know, there's a few things, a couple of third downs that I'd like to have back where they had some run tendencies across the 50, and you know, I felt like in terms of game flow and then just the distance of the third downs, you know, we stayed in some of our sub package and they were able to get some runs on us that converted. Obviously we got beat on the early man, third down for a touchdown, which is a fundamental technical thing that we have to improve upon. But I felt like, you know, we measured third down performance in three ways defensively. The first is, you know, 20% of the snaps, the total snaps for the opponent need to be third down. So if you want to be a good third down team, you have to get the opponent to third down. We met that mark, meaning we played well enough on first and second down to force third downs. The second measure is, you know, we want the average yard to gain to be 7 or more yards. And that puts us in an advantageous position to get off the field. And we met that mark too. You know, a lot of times, when you have the statistical measures we did coming out of the game, it's because he played a lot of third and threes. But that wasn't the case on Saturday. And so the third measure is we want to be at 67% stop rate. And we were short of that. And, you know, the runs hurt, but also little points of execution. And I think some things we can do structurally to help with some of the tendencies we put on film that we'll be looking at and looking to address as we go play against Auburn. So opportunities for us to improve, I think there are elements of that performance that I think we can actually pull from in a positive way, but certainly areas where we need to close the deal on drives and get the ball back to our offense, because the longer those drives extend, you know, the more it challenges our field position. And the field position, you know, being on long fields for our offense isn't a formula to generate points and to create space between us and the opponent.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee joining us as he does every Tuesday afternoon. Clark, thanks for chatting. Good luck this weekend at Auburn.
Thanks, guys. Y'all take care.
Yep.
Of course. Clark Lee and his Vanderbilt Commodores are on the road this weekend at Auburn. Auburn, by the way, despite being 3-5, 7-point favorites at this moment.
That's odd.
It does seem a bit odd, but Vanderbilt relishes the underdog role, and they've been good at it. But Vanderbilt at Auburn this weekend. We'll wrap up the show next. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. It's just me and Derek right now. Willie had to step out. He has some important things to do.
And I got a text from one Jared Stillman.
All right, so I just want to preface this.
Okay.
We have about 5 minutes.
Okay. It's quick. It's quick.
Okay.
It's very quick.
Because I know as well as you do, when Jared blows up your phone while you're doing your show, it's very distracting.
It is very distracting. I'm guilty. But no, I love it.
I am guilty of doing that to Jared as well. We all do it.
Oh, yeah. We do it to one. Hey, well,
Rex Rowe was actually texting me during your take on the ball didn't bounce our way, and he disagreed with you. But we don't have enough time to get into all of this.
I will get into all of that with all
of
them.
Okay. So what do you want to say to Jared before he comes
on
the air?
Jared yelled at me.
Yelled at you.
Yes, because he put it all caps.
Oh, no.
He yelled at me. He said it was literally about the ball not bouncing their way. Then he sent the article.
Okay.
And I am going to read this. It may take me about 20 seconds to read this. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. The question was, looking at what happened in the first 7 games and building for the last 10, what do you expect from the season, having seen what you've seen? And here's his answer. I expect our guys to continue to play hard, which is what they do. The ball's not round. You don't know which way it's going to bounce. Sometimes it's those couple of opportunities, I don't have my glasses, that we had in the game where we jar the ball loose, but it bounces right back to them. And then on the other side of it, they fumble and they get the ball right back. So you can't predict which way the ball is going to bounce. It's a metaphor. That's why he said you can't predict which way the ball is bouncing. He's right in regards to we're not a good enough team right now to give the ball away to the other team. We're not that good. Why? The ball is not going to bounce back our way because we're not a good roster right now. That's essentially what he's saying. He tied it in with the fumble, but if you read through all of that and you are a football person, you know exactly, and you've been in these rooms and you understand the lingo, you know exactly what he's talking about. I can see where Jared could take that and say the ball, he's talking about the football. I'm not going to argue with him about that. That's his perception. But me as a football guy, being in those rooms, hearing the lingo, I know exactly what he's saying. But I don't fault Jared for saying that or thinking that. I don't. It's him. There we go. Was that 30 seconds? Somewhere around there?
About that.
Okay. Good.
You left us with a couple of minutes to spare. And it's, you know, it's been really interesting.
And that's
all
I'm saying.
Sitting in this chair now for a month or so, month plus, it's been interesting to get a real pulse of the Titans fan base. And I the one thing that I stressed during our exercise with Willie, because I was seeing texts like this, and Jared likes to call mostly you and Willie the Rand Club, featuring Adam Vingan, since I'm the one that's facilitating the conversation.
But don't we give both sides of the coin when we're discussing it?
I think that's important. And we used this word yesterday.
Oh, we're the Rand Club. That's all we
yes,
are.
Yes, we're the Rand Club. The word I used yesterday when we were talking about Titans fans being angry is nuance.
Exactly.
And I think it's important to note that two things can be true. Mm-hmm. As general manager, of the Tennessee Titans, whether it was 2 years, 1 year, whatever mm-hmm. you want to say, since he has had the title of general manager of the Tennessee Titans, Rand Carthon has not done a good enough job, mm-hmm. period. End of story. He has not done a good enough job. At the same time, Rand Carthon was put at a disadvantage because of the work that John Robinson did near the end of his tenure. Yes, the Titans were a winning team when he was fired. I'd be curious to know what the I would love to go back in time if I could do this. Mm-hmm. They did not. Let's just say the Titans did not fire mm-hmm. John Robinson. Would this team be in as big of a mess? I don't know the answer to that. You said it, that John Robinson was fired at the right time.
Exactly.
Because the team was starting to go downhill.
The answer's no.
The answer's no to what?
Was that a drop or is that Jared actually chiming in?
It's actually Jared.
Oh my God. Jared, this is not your show.
Hold on, Jared.
This is not your show, Jared.
Are you saying, I just want to understand this. Jared, are you saying that had John Robinson kept the job, the Titans wouldn't have ended up losing the games that they lost last season and the season before that? Is that what you're saying?
They would have beat Jacksonville the week that he got fired, man. And they wouldn't be the worst
okay,
team.
Okay, you know
NFL.
What, Jared? You're not going to commandeer
exactly.
our program.
Hey, I'm with Jared on this one.
You have 4 hours. You know
9:30 Sunday morning. I got a lot saved up in the bag for the pregame show,
Derek.
Okay, but you know what? Your show hasn't started yet, so you need to get off the line. You just wait 5 minutes.
John Robinson got fired at the right time. He's
before you commandeer another program. Jeez, I thought that was a drop, not Jared actually chiming into the program. But Jared is coming up next on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We'll be back at 11 a.m. tomorrow.
Be love on your people. Have a wonderful and safe Tuesday. Remember, John Robinson was the same guy that got rid of A.J. Brown. Peace.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.